Luther.
Martin, ton rêve s'écarte un peu plus chaque matin, sous le baratin, comme des cocutes. Y'a plus qu'à continuer la lutte, car le monde est un ring. Main dans la main, nique on les pute dans ce combat de king.
Ma voix porte la couleur, celle de mon peuple la douleur. Grave, c'est moi, jamais perpétuant le message de Luther. L'espoir d'une lueur, je me répands comme une tumeur. Je lutte pour le respect, comme universelle valeur.
Le rêve est terminé, le cauchemar a pris place. Tout un passé qui retrace, des espoirs qui s'effacent. Je veux plus voir ces démons remonter à la surface. On se lâche pas de lutter, jusqu'au dernier Martin à lutter.
Grand lutteur comme Martin, king sans festin, fait pour destin, incertain mais reste dans mes actins. Pasteur passe mon temps à prier, pour le salut de mon sang je suis crié. Un black fiché, toujours prêt à saigner.
Même si c'est pas dans l'air du temps de rester plus live. Les jeunes tabassent, se crèvent la panse. 1998 en
avec
France.
Élégance, on crève en silence.
This is still KBOO 90.7 FM, and this is still Voices of the Middle East. I'm sitting in for Gudars. My name is Gabi, and for the second half of the program, we are pleased to have Mortaza Bahalou, who will be in Portland to read from his new book, The Quinseed Portion. Mr. Bahalou, are you there?
Yes.
Good evening. How are you?
Good evening to you too, Gabi. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. So you will be in Portland on February 9th at Powell's to read from the Quinseed portion.
Yes.
And you have quite a beautiful website that I checked around a little bit to learn a little bit about you.
Thank you.
I learned you were born in Dahrab in southern Iran.
Yes.
And I guess if there was a theme to your biography, it would be probably displacement. Would you like to say a little bit about that?
Well, you might very well say that, Gabi. I couldn't possibly comment. I guess writing a book is like painting, doing a painting. The artist perhaps should not reveal much, from what is on the canvas, and let the, the spectators speculate. But yes, displacement is indeed one dimension of not only my life, but also the lives of some of the characters of my book.
And I don't know if you want to go a little bit more into detail about your biography and how you experienced displacement.
Yes, of course. I was born in 1961, which means I was 17 years old, basically when the revolution happened in Iran, and so I was old enough to remember what we had before the revolution. And then when I immigrated to the U.S., I was probably too old to fully assimilate to my new homeland, so to speak. So I this dichotomy of Iran and America was embedded in me, and actually I call other people that are in the same age and same situation as myself, i.e. those that left Iran in the midst of the revolution at around my age, I call us the lost generation, because when we go back to Iran, we don't quite belong there. And over here, although many of us are quite successful and have accomplished lots of things, but, you know, nevertheless, not fully American. So.
And you, as a teenager, out of all places, ended up in Utah. So that must have been quite an experience.
Well, my dear, every minute of my life is is an experience. But yes, indeed, it was interesting. And you know, when you're an immigrant in a rush, you don't have much of a choice. You know, I could have ended up in Texas, where I am right now, or elsewhere. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess because writing isn't quite a respectable profession, you became a pharmacist, but you remained, you kept writing during that whole time, is that correct?
Yes, let's say that in the 70s, becoming an engineer and a doctor was quite fashionable in Iran. Literature was really demodé. And, of course, then when your destiny is threatened by a revolution abroad and the finances start suffering, then people are sort of persuaded to study something tangible. So I did that, and, you know, I'm happy about it. I have a career, and it pays the bills. So in the evenings, I could speculate about pains and miseries and get inspired and write a few lines.
And the book you will introduce in Portland, you wrote, it was printed in November of last year. Do you want to say a little bit about that book?
Sure. It's a novel. It's called The Quince Seed Potion. And as you know, quince is a fruit, actually. Its origins go back to Iran, a very interesting fruit. But it's basically the life of a servant in an aristocratic home in rural Iran, and it basically goes over 5 decades of Iranian history, a very turbulent era of Iranian history, I might add. And it could even be considered a crash course on Iranian history. Its historical events are quite accurate, and actually a lot of the readers, a lot of people who finished the book and contacted me either via emails or phone calls have made that comment. But that's only one dimension of it, and good characteristic for a book is that it should be multi-dimensional. And of course, you know, in the Middle East, there is this cliche that any Middle Eastern novel has to be a political novel. But mine, I think, has other dimensions, sort of taboo exposés, issues on sensualities, issues on sort of dysfunctionalities of family, you know, clandestine desires, lots of things that we in the Middle East experience behind the sort of tall brick walls and sort of encrypted and sort of, you know, we experience them, but we never reveal them.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect to get any red flag for revealing some of these things?
Red flags, what do you mean?
Any people who are offended or take offense to talking about some of these issues?
Well, so far, none, actually. So far, I've received a lot of positive comments, actually, admiration that, you know, someone was courageous enough to sort of hang the dirty laundry from the window out to the public square.
And again, you will present this book, The Queen Seed Potion, on February 9th at 7:30 at the Main Powell's bookstore in Portland.
Yes, and the one Burnside. On Burnside.
Yeah.
It's actually my most favorite bookstore. And I have a daughter that attends Reed College, and whenever I visit her, I have to go on a pilgrimage to Powell's.
It's a dangerous place. On your website, you talk a little bit about writers that inspired you, and two of the Iranian writers you mention are Sadeh Hedayat and Farouk Farrukhzad, which probably aren't very well known to the majority of our listening audience. Would you like to say a little bit about those two?
Yes, Hedayat is very well known in Europe. Unfortunately, not over here, not across the Atlantic. And he's sort of the Iranian Kafka. As a matter of fact, he wrote a manifesto on Kafka in Iran. Very interesting writer, very profound. He was obsessed with tragedies, and he sort of caused a lot of melancholy and sort of shocked the whole population in Iran. And I always, you know, admire people who shock the system. And also I loved his style, the Kafkaesque style. Aside from that, he contributed a lot on ancient Persian cultures, and he wrote a lot of nonfiction as well. Farouk Farrukhzad, who was a poetess, I admire her greatly, because she also was very courageous as a woman in the 60s, early 60s, to sort of reveal the feminine, intimate thoughts, sensual, and even, you know, her poetry sort of flirted with the realm of erotica. And again, these things were sort of the unwritten rule, did not allow these things to appear in the public realm. But I do admire these two very courageous writers. Other writers, Middle Eastern writers that have influenced me a lot, one is the Egyptian writer Mahfouz, Naguib Mahfouz or Najib Mahfouz. He has contributed a lot to you know, to my interest and sort of stubbornness in literature.
And you call your book a multicultural novel, and I think sometimes people here don't easily realize that, for example, Iran is a multicultural society, and you're a good example for that. Mm-hmm. Would you like to say something about that?
Sure. Well, of course, you know, in America, we are obsessed in labeling something. You're right. You know, this book has to have a genre, otherwise it cannot exist. So we had to put that, you know, the multicultural genre to the book. But yes, Iran indeed is very, very heterogeneous. Unfortunately, Iran has been, since the 20s, the Iranians look at the whole country as a Tehran-centric country that, you know, and unfortunately Tehran also, you know, a citizen of Tehran after, let's say, if your family moves from Kurdistan to Tehran, after one or two generations, that family loses his Kurdish identity and gets assimilated in the Tehrani you know, modernity. And I love the city of Tehran. It's very beautiful and cosmopolitan. But at the same time, I resent that, you know, the societies, the so-called modernity in Iran has sort of diluted our origins and, you know, ethnic languages and the ways of life and cultural identities and so on and so forth. Because I really think that when a language or a dialect dies, you know, a way of living dies, and mm-hmm. a lot of embedded discoveries, you know, whether medical, agricultural, you know, whatever, that was sort of hidden in those vocabularies that are dying or becoming extinct, sort of vanish.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself are multilingual, correct?
Yes, I was, you know, I'm from a Turkish family, Turkic family. We are Iranian, you know, we are Persian, but of Turkic background. When I was little, I learned Turkish, and I'm really happy about that. I think it has really enhanced my relationship with the previous generations in my family. That's why I go back to Iran every year, and it allows me to sort of go to remote areas and villages and talk to the elderly and communicate with them at their comfort level, linguistic level, and sort of ask about how goats acted 60 years ago and how certain trees were planted and so on and so forth. So I'm really very happy about that. And I think one takes it for granted, you know, the sort of invisible treasures that mm-hmm. are hidden in these remote cultures.
And since you're firmly planted in at least two cultures, what do you kind of wish for U.S.-Iranian relations?
Well, I, for one, I hope that as Americans, we would be smart enough to sort of not to get fooled by the fact that the only problem in Iran might be this sort of nuclear power, nuclear weaponry system. I think Iran has many other problems, and unfortunately, I think in the Middle East, people sort of present something out in the facade and with rhetorics sort of, you know, dilute the main issues. I hope that we as Americans somehow could share how we could sort of mobilize and provide opportunities for the young population in Iran. We have a huge population that are very educated. We have probably, I don't think, typical Iranian youth is poisoned by fundamentalism. As a matter of fact, I think we are 30 or 40 years ahead of elsewhere in the Middle East on sort of experiencing and getting, you know, rid of that itch, the fundamentalism itch. The level of education is there, the level of curiosity is there. So I hope as Americans we could teach Iranians on infrastructure, institutions, and so on and so forth, so we could sort of rebuild the nation with our own human resources. But of course, liberty is very important in many countries, especially in Iran. So I hope that we could help our people in Iran more so at human levels rather than the macro political levels, because those things are like band-aids. They work for a while and then the band-aid comes off and the wound reveals itself.
And I think one way to gain that human connection and understanding is, of course, novels. And again, I'm speaking to Mortaza Bahalu, who will be in Portland to read from Quinseed Potion on February 9th at 7:30 at Powell's. And I may as well give your website address, since I talked about it a lot.
Sure. It's www.morteza. And Baharlu, B as in boy, aharloo.com.
And it's all, Mortaza Bahalu is all one word.
Yes, it is.
If you missed any of that, you can call the station and I'll call you back and give you the information.
Wonderful.
Do you have any parting words for us until we see you in February?
Well, I hope that some of your listeners will get a chance to read my book, so hopefully when we meet in Portland, we could discuss it, because nothing gives me greater joy than talking to the readers about the book and discussing the ins and outs of the characters, the themes, narrations, and all that.
And thank you very much for joining us on Cable, and I
my
look
pleasure.
Forward to seeing you when you come here.
Thank you very much, Gabby.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Goodbye. Bye. So again, the book is Quinseed Potion, and the author is Mortaza Bahalu, February 9th at Powell's at 7:30. And with that, we're almost at the end of this installment of Voices of the Middle East. If you listen to the first half of the show about torture, I wanted to give you another resource, more information about that whole subject of the nomination of Alberto González. And torture is available from the Center for Constitutional Rights. And their website is www.ccr-ny.org. The Center for Constitutional Rights is filing a suit, is hoping to file a suit against officials of the U.S. government in Germany to investigate them for war crimes. The Center for Constitutional Rights is also requesting the U.S. government to explain where all these ghost prisoners are. There is increasing evidence that there is a large number of ghost prisoners within Guantanamo, within Afghanistan, within Baghdad, but also out on the sea at ships in the British island Diego Garcia and in facilities in Jordan. And those people do not have legal representation, nobody even knows who they are. And again, this is all available from the Center for Constitutional Rights. They also have more information about the nomination of Alberto González as the Attorney General of the United States. Thank you very much for listening. This is KBO 90.7 FM, Voices of the Middle East. I was sitting in for Gudars, and he will be back himself next month. Good night. Wow.